for just about everything for the outdoors. Go to MidwayUSA.com.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
The content is locked and loaded, and Joe is as nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. Yeah, buddy, tonight's show is live, so get ready, y'all. Today, we find out which one of our grinders will be hunting with our crew this September. We talk about what it means to cast call for elk, and we'll be answering questions from our live viewing audience tonight, as well as from our Elk Bros mailbox. So, my friends, pull up a chair, adjust your volumes just right, and welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting.
Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting, brought to you by ElkBros.com, with your host, Gilbert Ornelas, and elk hunting coach, Joe Gilley. You want to hunt elk, and they live to hunt elk. Their goal is to share with you what they have learned grinding it out for over 35 seasons, doing what they love. So come on into camp and set a spell. Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunters.
Hello there, everyone. If it's your first time with us, glad to have you. Hope you enjoy our show. And as always, for those blue collar hunters following our show with us each week and grinding it out, welcome back to Elk Camp. I'm Gilbert Ornelas, the host of your show, and we have the full crew here tonight with us, y'all. That's right, from Katy, Texas. We got the leader of the Venezuelan Mafia, Mr. Luis Gonzalez with a Z. And in the Dallas metro area, we're waiting on Manano to come in from Cuesta, New Mexico. That's right. We got the legend in the house, Mr. R.C. Knox. And from Cimarron, we've got our elk hunting coaches in the house, Mr. Leroy Chavez, the ninjas in the house, and WWJGD, what would Joe Gillia do's in the house. And y'all, we are live tonight on YouTube. Welcome, everyone, and so glad to have you.
Man, I'm freaking out here though, Gil, man. We're trying to get this thing to technology to happen between here and YouTube. We got that little bit of delay going on. I got to find a way to cover up that screen because it's freaking me out. Hey, boys, look at everybody's What's coming up, in. Boys? We got Charlie. We got, Shane, Kyle, Jeff is here. Jeff, man, are you wearing the vest, Jeff? And there's Guy Duplanche is in, man. Hey, welcome everybody, man.
Brother Guy's in the house.
So, and everybody didn't get to hear the intro where Gilbert said Joe's as nervous as a cat in a room full of rocking chairs.
How's that, Joe? Why are you so nervous, man? What's up?
Bro.
Hey, why don't you share how you really feel?
Hey, y'all, we never know what's going to come out of this crew.
There's no doubt about that. Stick around. It's not over yet.
I told Loretta, man, I was like, God dang, I'm so nervous about tonight. She goes, you've never been nervous in front of people. I go, it ain't about me.
It's about the crew.
It's about
we got our northern brother, Mr. Travis O'Shea's in the house tonight.
All right.
Yeah, how about that, man?
My son, Logan Ornelas, says, gonna be a good one tonight, boys. Hang on.
Yeah, no need to be nervous. Thanks, Charlie, man. I know you, exactly. There, Charlie's got our back again, right?
So always.
That's pretty cool. Here directly, we're going to find out who the winner is of our giveaway. It's going to be one lucky or unlucky winner. It depends how close you're sleeping to these boys' tents. That will be joining us this September, guys, man. Are you guys excited
to find out? If you're camping next to Manana, you won't be sleeping. He'll be snoring way too hard.
Yeah, and that guy can go to sleep in like a record 13 seconds. From time he zips his tent shut to time he lays his head down, 13 seconds, and he is in full roar. Hear me? Roar.
We're not sure how many questions we're going to get, so we do have a main topic on cast calling for elk, and hopefully that'll stir up a few questions. In fact, we're going to just make this part one because cast calling really has like three parts that can be extensive, and we can dive off as deep into it or as shallow. And I think for y'all's benefit, for our listeners' benefit, we really want to kind of go in depth for this because there's so many times we get all of these certain questions from guys about calling elk. So we're going to kind of get into that. Jonathan. Hey, Jonathan's in the house, man. We have one of our Hunt Oars crew in the house here.
Oh, right? Man. Jonathan Scott's in the house for sure, man.
So
we love the live format too. Joe's chicken all the time, Jonathan.
I know,
knows, I
man. I don't understand why, dude.
He's scared of this crew.
We've been
baby.
Asking for this for a long time.
Yeah. So the only problem is
Manano's not here yet.
When we do it live, our listeners that hear this in 2 weeks from now, they're not live and they're like, what are they talking? What are they doing? You know, so if you don't know, you can go on YouTube and watch this, man, and you'll be able to catch up to it. All right.
Exactly.
Have a drink, Luis. Charles, man.
Charlie knows what's up.
Charlie's got it. Okay. Let's pick us a winner, boys. Let's see who this is going to be. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share my screen.
Wait a minute, Joe. Are you going to do this right now? Cause I need kind of psychologically prepare for this. This is cool. Everybody
is
needs
so
to
cool.
understand this is such a freaking cool milestone, man.
It really is. This has been a 3-year labor of love together. And listen. Everybody that's on this panel with us right here, right down to RC Knox being here, you guys don't really know what's in store for you until Joe gets this done. Cause we've talked about this and it's been kind of a dream and a goal of ours, the last 3 years. And, by God, y'all better hold on cause this thing's fixing to get real for sure.
And we've got two of our new Elk Bros coaches there in the chat room as well. Guy DuPlanche there and Travis O'Shea are on, man.
Travis O'Shea, yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep. And you guys, look, it's going to be so much fun at our elk camp with our crew there. And then on that second hunt that we have, for those fellas that come into that hunt, they're going to have myself, Gilbert, Guy DuPlanche and Travis O'Shea there as Elk Bros coaches. I mean, we went into the dugout and got the blue chips there, man.
You got world champion elk callers in camp, brother.
Yep.
I mean, world champion elk callers and elk call makers in camp, man. Absolutely. And you got a cat that has lived his life in and around elk all his life and have went 37 out of 39 years, has killed bull elk, do it yourself, public land, and has gotten it done. He's been my hunting partner for a very long time now, 13 seasons. Man, Mr. Joe Gillia, what would Joe Gillia do, is in the house and fixing to give away what we've talked about for the last 3 years.
All right.
Let's get it going, brother.
Here we go.
Oh man, no drum roll or anything like that, dude.
I have.
I'm not even participating, and I'm excited, dude.
Yeah.
What the heck?
I've got the spinning moments. Wheel here, jeez, man.
I feel like you're not giving it like enough, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. There isn't, I don't know.
We'll have to add the edit in with the crowd cheering. Woo! And the crowd cheering.
I'm nervous. Give me 1 second. I'm hyperventilating here, dude.
Are you guys ready for this? And everybody's so lined up. Guys, I'll let you know that your odds are 1 in 64. So we have 1 in 64 over here on the side. And we're going to spin the wheel.
Hold on a second. you just not. Oh, man. Come on, Joe.
Let me ask you guys something.
Yeah.
What kind of odds, y'all? It's 1 in 64. Those odds in New Mexico, brother.
Oh,
there ain't
no way,
guys. I can't believe 64 guys are going to get an opportunity to get in here and draw an elk tag and hunt with some of the finest elk hunters
exactly.
in the country.
And that's what I want to hear. So before this name comes up, I need to understand, what is this person winning?
Okay.
All right. RC Knox, can you show us something that they're going to win
when they participate
in this thing?
All right, so RC, you're going to have to talk to be able to do that, and we'll show it again when we get off the screen share. But go ahead and show it now and say
it's the legend RC Knox, Mr. Silversmith himself. Look at that!
Wow.
Yeah, I'll be giving
honorary.
They won't see him unless RC speaks.
That's Elk Bros buckle
made by RC Knox himself.
Handmade.
That is awesome, man.
Handmade.
And they're going to have look. It's 7 days with the crew. And if they want to continue hunting after those 7 days, because we're
knock your lights out.
Yeah, so they can go up until the 14th. So, they get a chance to be with us. They want to continue the hunt. They can rock and roll. All right. So, are we doing this? Are we pushing the button?
Luis, are you ready?
I just don't feel like the energy is quite there yet, man. I'm just.
We going to get like one of these Instagram posts where it draw it out for the next 35 minutes or what, man?
Here we go.
So what is the rush? Why are we trying to do this so quickly, dude? I mean, why are we pushing this? I feel like it's being forced upon us.
Well, you got to understand, in 2 weeks, not everybody is viewers on YouTube. There's also listeners of the show going, how long can we drag this out?
Hey, for everyone that participated this awesome, awesome opportunity, everyone that has supported us, you don't understand how important this is for us. We're opening the doors of our camp, of our very tight and united group to a, potentially a stranger to the group to come in.
Luis
and
wants
share
background
with
checks. He wants background checks, bro. That's where he's going.
I do. I do.
Yeah.
background checks.
Because this person is going to share with us the 7 hunting days, seven most important days in our year, the ones that we prepare the entire year for. I mean, this is our sacred ground, sacred circle. This is what we live for year in and year out. And it means a lot to us, you know? So
100%.
For us to open up this way, people need to understand that it means a lot, and we're doing it because you all have been the reason why we're sitting here tonight sharing this with everybody, and we're extremely appreciative. We're extremely blessed, and I honestly can't wait to know who this person is going to be, because it's going to be epic.
Well said. And so what we're going to do to honor something too, Chav, you've been my brother by my side and hunting with me. This will be our 40th season, man. And I'm going to leave it up you to tell me to spin.
Well, before we start,
that's my kind of guy right there.
That's why he is
the legend.
Legend.
He's the ninja.
Yeah, I believe the winner can bring along a friend, correct?
Yes, they can. Absolutely.
So this is for two people that are coming to New Mexico to hunt with this group. And hopefully we don't leave you traumatized when it's all said and done. but I think we're ready. Let's spin it. We're ready to go.
Look out. Here it comes, fellas.
Number four. Cody Kirkpatrick.
Cody Kirkpatrick. Wins the hunt.
That is winner right there.
Is he on with it?
Congrats, Cody.
I don't know that Cody Kirkpatrick is on here. So we'll announce that on there. Everything set up for the hunt. We're counting the days now, boys.
Counting the days.
All right.
Wishing bad to Cody. We want to thank everybody, man, that entered this.
Yes. Muchas gracias.
Yes. Muchas gracias.
Yeah.
And yeah, big thank you.
I can't believe we've already picked it, Joe. It's been crazy. You know?
I feel like it was just way too quick, man.
I know, man. You know, let's get this party started, Joe, and head over to our Elk Bros mailbox.
Absolutely, man. We had another question from Adam. I don't know if you remember. He asked a question last week, right? And I don't think I think he wanted to zero in a little bit more because he said, during the midday hunt, when you're following elk to their bedding area, how long do you give them once you know they've bedded down before going after them? Or do you try to find a vantage point and watch them until they start moving? So.
Depends on the wind, Joe.
Well, yeah. And the other thing is we don't necessarily, just because you've put them to bed doesn't mean that you've been able to, be up on them or see them. I mean, you can put animals to bed because you hear them. They've been talking the whole time. They end up stopping. That bull starts doing those bed bugles. They end up with, we'll see. I don't know if I'm willing to do this, guys. I mean, right in the middle of the question here, but, this is a surprise appearance by, let's see if he has audio or anything going on.
Oh my God. Huh? Manano, you're late, like usual.
Dude.
Why are you even showing up, bro? It's already been done. We've already
having my lunch.
I'm having my lunch. Where are you
What's
at?
What's going
like
on, fellas?
I was a day late
in Australia, bro.
Day late and a dollar short, always.
Manano, man. What?
Love you, brother.
Waiting on Manano.
We had to hear the legend.
Legend RC Knox.
Legend RC Knox.
Manano, we already went through introductions, dude.
Well, I don't care about you. I need to say hello to my buddy. Hey, Chuff.
Hey.
What's going on, Chuff?
Everything's going good.
So this is Manano's first appearance, and that's why we're not sure if it's Manano. This could actually be a recorded version of Manano. There's practice lines and stuff like that.
No, it's not.
We've seen Manano in I guess since January, no? Since January, right?
I think it was last week.
Things were good.
5 months. And I'm surprised you're not having another child by now after 5 months.
No.
He's working on it.
I have tried, though.
That's the problem. He hasn't because it's been in the house.
No, I have tried, though.
Okay.
Manano, I want you to understand one
thing. I don't know if
I should have picked it there,
man.
We already gave our elk hunt away.
We gave our elk hunt away, bro.
Cody Kilpatrick won the elk hunt, and Charlie Newberry is back up, bro.
Wow.
So it's all done.
Congratulations to those
dreams
guys.
Dreams achieved. Guys, they're going to be in camp. Listen. Wow. Manano will be in camp. He'll have the 5-star food ready to rock and roll. You boys are going to be entertained and full bellies. I promise you that for sure.
The only thing he's good
for. That's a fact.
Yeah.
Well, we said Kirkpatrick had to stay with the person that showed up last on the podcast. So
he's bunking with you, Manano.
He's in your tent, Manano. Okay.
Manano, you even have the CEO of Wapiti River Calls at Wapiti River Outdoors, Travis O'Shea, saying, waiting on Manano.
That's a privilege. That is a That is a privilege.
That's a privilege.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, Simonato, we were on the mailbox, right, bro? And what I'm going to do, I'm going to give the question so that you know what it is. And we started to talk about it. The question was from Adam Visser out of Calgary, Canada. And he said, during the midday hunt, when you're following the elk to their bedding area, how long do you give them once you know they've bedded down before going after them? Or do you try to find a vantage point and watch them until they start moving? And what I was saying to everybody is that just because you've put them to bed doesn't mean you have eyes on them. Most of the time, you're going to know they've gone to bed. You're most likely in the area. You've got to be where the wind's right. Your thermals are most likely right at the time, or they wouldn't be bedding there. So basically, you are off of their bedding area. So to answer your question, what we're trying to do at that point in time, so it says, how long do you give them once you know they bedded down? I'm there until that bull gets up again. Right. So I want to stay where the thermals are going to change, start going up. And I want to be on the downwind thermal side. And most likely as it gets to that 10, 11, 12 o'clock and gets warm, those thermals, especially if I'm on the same level as they are going to start going up. And I want to be on the same level or as much as possible as that animal. And now because they are in their bed, and they're going to be there for hours. Now that bull might get up. That bull, in fact, I'm going to tell you how to get him up here in a second.
Yeah, buddy.
That bull might get up. And if he does, he's going to give a little bit. He might talk a little bit. He might get up and just scent check. He might go for a drink. He might start eating because this guy's been working so much when he's with those cows, right? So we're off and we're going to try to be on that same level. And we now get to pick the playing ground or where we're going to set up. And I give that enough time and I can either wait on him or after a certain amount of time, I can create my own opportunity. Yeah, go ahead, man.
So how do you manage? Because I mean, we're talking patience here. We're talking kind of playing the time right. Right.
Right.
And yeah, you're at the same level. You're being patient, you're waiting. What kind of time frames are we thinking of or talking about? And also, how do you play the wind factor? Because, you know, we all know that wind is going to shift and turn on you. So, I mean, I'm thinking time versus wind changes, and how do you manage all of that?
The bull's going to tell you what time in his temperature, right? Well, when you start feeling him out, right? He's going to tell you how much time.
Well,
if he don't say anything forever and you've gone through what Joe's going to fix to talk about, then you know you're not going to get in there and get him up, right? If he's vocal and he's bugling in his bed a lot, then chances are he's pretty active and you can get him up. But if he's pretty quiet and the wind's real shifty, you probably ought to wait till he sounds off.
Totally agree. Yeah.
Until he sounds off. I mean, otherwise, you just run the risk of going there and getting busted.
Until he sounds off and the wind is right, right?
Exactly.
You know,
and that could be, who knows how long it'd be 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, you know?
Yeah. Luis, you want to stay off of him far enough that you are not going to get winded. And if that means that you got to drop off on a downside or you've got to get over another ridge where you can possibly.
Play the terrain.
Yeah. And. Yeah. Just depending on what that wind's doing, because if you don't want to blow them out until the wind settles down and you know where they're at because they're in bed, man, you can go up over a ridge where you don't have to worry about necessarily your scent going to it. But the good thing is, as it gets warmer during the day, everything's going to go up like this. It's not necessarily going uphill, especially if you're on the same level, right? The only thing you have to worry about then is a strong wind on that.
Right.
If there's no wind, it's just going to kind of go up and you're copacetic like that, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just like Gil said, man, that time kind of depends. Now, if I go in and I know that they're in their bed, if I can go ahead and get up, you know, close to that bull 150 yards, that's close enough, right? And I start doing some, creating a breeding sequence, just introduce some cows and then introduce some bull sounds and just do my scenario over there. And see if he doesn't. Now, he's either going to do one or two things. He's either going to sound off as he's getting up, or he's going to get up and walk over there just to check out what that other bull looks like, right? So there's a way for me to create that opportunity.
Especially if he's got cows.
Oh, well, that's most likely why he's betting. If he didn't have cows, I wouldn't be chasing him to a destination. I most likely would have been able to turn that guy and bring him in, right?
Right. Would playing as a younger bull be kind of the way to go in that situation to try to get him up and go come things checked out?
No, I wouldn't even worry about, because the sounds that I'm doing are going to be low sounds, right?
Yeah, we're not calling to him.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to call to him.
I'm going to start breaking a tree.
I'm in like a young bull trying to call on his cows.
Well, and I won't be really bugling. I'm going to use those low sounds like huffs. No. I'm going to use raking.
Pants.
I'm going to use some whine, some groans, like
maybe
that.
Maybe even some glunking.
So, yeah. And the raking of the tree is really going to do that. I want to sound like I am tending my cows over there, like I have my cow. And I can let it down and bring it back up. Let it down, bring it back up, and really look for that guy. If I have a partner, we're even better. But I get to choose the setup. So how
– But your partner has to be good at calling. So meaning like if you're with Manano, you can't do that, right?
I'll let Manano kill it. I'll call.
Exactly. I got it.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, the last bull that you missed, it was because I stopped for him. He just missed
what?
And I stopped the bull without any diaphragm because I know how to cook cow call.
I'm so glad diaphragm. I recorded it. I'm so glad I recorded it.
I recorded it too.
I am so glad I recorded it. No, you didn't. You didn't. That's the only thing you had to do and you didn't.
I did. Actually, I got on my GoPro. I got your miss.
We miss you so much.
So whoever is going, you know, and what was Mr. Kirkpatrick's first name?
Cody,
right?
Cody.
I want you to hear this, bro, because you're going to be hunting with these guys, right? And you're going to get the full experience because this is it, man. It's awesome. You're going to find, they'll argue about water.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, we
the temperature.
If there isn't anything to argue about, we'll find it.
If it's right or not. Right. Water's wet or not, they argue.
Yeah, right.
The only thing is after a while it gets boring because I'm always right.
Just what you think.
So, going back to that bull that's bedded. Yes. you had asked a question, Luis. You were like, I hope you understand now that we're not necessarily screaming. I can let out a bugle, but if I do a bugle, it's really going to be something where I'm going to do more of a little short display for my cows. Not doing a challenge or anything
Correct.
Like that. And then if that guy sounds off over there, and here's the big one, y'all. This is the big one where most people mess up. Like when you're doing a tending sequence or you're doing breeding sequences with an animal, you'll get a bull finally that will come in and he'll sound off. And what he's doing is he's not sounding off to you as the bull. He's sounding off to your cows. He right. wants to sound off and say, hey, I'm over here. Come to me, right? And the big mistake most people do is immediately – they change their tactic from ignoring that bull and doing your own thing to immediately going and engaging him. And it's not the time yet. Not until he gets in your bubble just like a regular bull would do. So you want to continue. Now, if you're going to do a bugle after he does, it's going to be your own display bugle at your cows again. And it sounds like you're answering him. But you're not. It's the same thing that happens to people when a bull's going on destination. A lot of times we get a bull to respond and we think that bull's responding to us. Yes and no. He is responding because we bugled, but he's not responding to us. He's telling his cows, whoa, ladies.
Yeah. Nobody go nowhere.
Don't you go nowhere. I'm right here.
Yeah. I'm the
right?
man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he
I'm
wants
the man
to make
in
sure that. He is advertising himself as he's going. So we're like, wow, he just screamed when I did this, so he wants to fight. That ain't the case, man. Mm-hmm. That ain't the case. Mm-hmm. He is, and those cows are continually moving, and he's going to engage, he's going to stop, he's going to bugle, and then he's going to run up, man. And you're like, God dang, they're running away, right? So that's something to keep in mind. And then once you end up with that critter coming in to where he does start to get into your bubble,
right?
then you want to do something about it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, man, for sure. As soon as he engages you in one of the things he'll probably do is if he chuckles at you, then he's talking to you. He's talking to you then, especially if he's hearing that lost cow or whatever, and he chuckles, he's trying to call you to him, right? So then you can decide on what you want to do with him or not, right? And the best thing is try to ignore him and get him to come to you, you know? And you just put your show on until he gets more and more feverish about what he's doing. And that can take some time.
What would you do, guys, if you had your gal with you and a guy's over there and he's far enough away over there and he's saying, hey, you know, like that. Now, you might ignore that guy just a little bit. He comes a little bit closer right there. You might turn and give that guy a glare. Now, remember, that's a visual. That's how animals like to. If I had a bull right there and I could show him my rack, that's exactly what I would do. But the other thing a bull's going to do is going to go, he's going to warn that guy to stay away, right?
Right.
So now if he comes in and now he does a display bugle to pull those cows, you cut that puppy off just like that. You slap him in the face. Now it's on like Donkey Kong.
Yeah,
right?
Buddy. Okay? Yeah, buddy.
So that's
Hey, Joe, are we going to be taking questions from the people
on
the chat?
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Because we got a couple questions. So Mr. Waldron, he's asking, when is that bugle tube going to be available, you think?
Oh, man,
we're talking about the soloist.
Joe, you ruined my night, bro, man. So,
you know, I kind of agree with him. I'm curious. I want to know.
You ought to be the one that has the money invested, bro.
I'm
waiting too. So the story is on the tube is that I received my first edition that came back. It wasn't acceptable to my standards. And Travis, you know as well as I do what it's like to be in this business. Travis has a whole bunch of tubes made already. And they're great tubes, fantastic, made by this company. So it's not a company issue. What it's been has been a COVID issue. And
raw materials are harder to get.
Well, I'm working with an American company based in China.
Gotcha.
And COVID shut down their cities there for months. And so when I sent back my grunt tube to say, no, I want this fixed again, it's like everything shut the heck down.
Yeah.
So I'm due to have the next, hopefully this one. I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic. I don't want to get too happy because I've been let down already one time.
Yep.
So Chav has taught me to be cautiously optimistic that when it comes in this time, and it's supposed to be here probably in the next 10 days, and I'm hoping for that, you know, if everything has worked out in that city, that I get it in about 10 days. And if approved, then it only takes a few weeks for me to get my first shipment.
So best case scenario versus worst case scenario?
I wish I could tell you, bro, because my best case scenario was before the season.
Stay tuned for more updates.
I am not going to curse myself and say or set a timeline. I'm just telling you that I really want to have it happen. And I won't forget you, John, man.
Joe.
Oh, it's John. I'm sorry, John. Yeah. I called you Joe, man.
So Joe, Adam Visser's question to summarize. Make sure the wind is exactly what you need before you proceed. Number two, check his temperature and don't talk to him, but create the scenario that you want for him to come to you.
Now that is if I'm the one that is creating the opportunity.
Right.
Let's say this dude gets up out of his bed and he sounds off.
Oh yeah.
Now I can possibly engage him directly, but you know, he's already got up and sound off and I can now dip my toe, find out if he's interested in a cow or if I give myself a little chuckle or a little whiny bull. Now that's young bull that you're talking about, Luis. I might be able to do that or even call to his ladies to see if he's going to be interested in coming this way. So there's different strategies to do this, whether he's initiating by him getting up and sounding off or whether I'm going to kind of create my own scenario and pull him to me.
There might not really be a fixed recipe. There's just a few options and, you know, you can kind of pick it based on the mood, of the scene.
You test the waters. You see which button you're going to push. I always start. I'm always a lover before I'm a fighter.
I'm a fighter,
so I start with a cow first, and then if I don't get a rise out of that, I might give a little bit of a bull sound to see what I get from him, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Don't look now, fellas. The Flatlander is in the house. Mr. The Cole Wilkes, the beast himself, is in the house. So good to have you, brother Cole.
We got another question.
Joe, we got another question from the Elk Bros mailbox.
Yeah, oh, actually, I was going to say, Charlie asked, that he said he heard us talk about the Kyle Pickle, in the early Kyle Pickle scenario in the early podcast. And, there's any chance we can kind of quickly go over it.
We'll get to that one right after Richard Flock's question, Joe.
Okay. So let's go to Charlie's right after we get done with Richard. Go ahead and Gilbert and give us Richard's.
Yeah. Richard Flock from, Springfield, Oregon. He writes into us, said, could you help with this scenario? It's early morning, dark, and you hear elk heading up to their bedding area. You know where the bedding area is at, but no matter how hard you try to get close, the wind swirls every direction. What would you do? Would you sit and wait? Absolutely. Got to have the wind right or you'll never have an opportunity, right, Joe? Well,
this runs right off of just what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know. You know where they're going up into their bedding. And, you know, usually in the morning, generally, Richard, especially in the dark, and that first morning is probably going to be your most still. You know, if you've got wind blowing at that time, man, you better back out if you know where they're at. Don't put yourself in a situation where you're going to blow them out of there. And you hunt Oregon, right? So you're in that real, real thick stuff, and it's really hard to find those boogers. So I would not risk that, man. I would stay away and sit until wind is my best buddy. And if I have it right, then I can proceed from there. Okay?
That's right.
Absolutely. All right.
So let's go to that. Let's go to Charlie's question.
Charlie's question. What was it, bro? Oh, the
question was about the cow pickle scenario.
Right. So here's what I mean by a pickle, Charlie, is that everybody knows baseball, what the pickle is, right? You know, you're throwing the ball one way and then something runs back the other. Well, that's just the way I envision this, because what I do is, I've especially used this when I'm not able to, like if I'm in a hunting area where there's private or there's a fence line with another unit that I can't go across and I have no choice but to pull animals to me and I'm trying to get them interested in coming to me. So what I'm doing is I'm creating a scenario and I'm creating a scenario of a herd bull with his cows, and I'll even sometimes add additional satellites that are going sounding off, because what do multiple bulls signify when they're bugling?
Rut going on.
Yeah, there's a rut. There's a hot cow, right? So I will do some of that. And what I like to do is, and I'm glad Guy's here, because, we talked about this, is that I actually, most people go to or towards an animal when they're trying to pull them in. I like to do just the opposite, because a lot of times, I've had elk that have followed me when I'm calling going away, where sometime when I stay put, they'll just stay off a certain distance, 100 yards or something like that. So what I like to do is to sound like a moving herd, and with cows in that herd as I'm moving, and then what I'll do is I'll come back and I'll come back from where I was between me and that bull, and I'll start throwing out lost cow calf sounds. Right. So basically I moved off and I came back and I gave that lost calf cow sound, like they're trying to catch up to the herd and now become low hanging fruit for that bull. That's the whole idea of it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anybody have a question off of that? Because in my mind, I know exactly what I'm doing. So
yeah, no, it's like you just said, it's the pickle effect in baseball. where you running something down, you moving in this direction, making it sound like this, moving it back the other direction, making it sound like that. You know, if you guys want to know what podcast it was, we talked about that with Paul Medell too on our couple podcasts ago. So that was an incredible podcast.
Actually, that podcast hasn't come out yet, bro. Well,
oh, gotcha. Okay.
It'll be out. It'll be out by the time this one comes out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So hopefully you guys have heard that. If you haven't, man, y'all get after it, because that Paul Medell edition is flat amazing as far as calling and stuff.
Hey, so we're getting a lot of messages from Cole over there, the Flatlander, man. He's a blessing.
Nice, dude. Yep. Absolutely. So good to have him, man. The beast. And he's been working in this heat, Joe, and this Texas heat's brutal already. It's 95 to 99 degrees already, man. It's super brutal.
You know, there's an answer to that.
There's no doubt, but he has to work in it so he can take all the September and October off. We hate that. At the end of the day, we love him because that's
a working our dream in life. Oh, man. I tell you what, man, if you're out there in the Burnett area and you need somebody to get something done, that is the man to call right there. Right?
Definitely, definitely.
Okay.
Well, Joe, let's get this party started and head over. You know what time it is? It's time for our Elk Bros shout outs. If you're new to our show, this is just a shout out to a few cities with our most listeners topping our charts this week, Joe.
Chav, you're up first, bro.
Okay. Known as the turkey capital of the world, this week's top listening city received its name when two early settlers and rivals flipped a coin with a winner naming the town after himself. Known as a motorcycle friendly town and destination, it is the home of Nighthawk Custom, an American firearm company that manufactures custom firearms and tactical knives for competition, shooters, military, law enforcement, and self-defense. And this is in Berryville, Arkansas.
Berryville, Arkansas.
Yeah. Awesome.
I have never heard of Berryville, Arkansas. And let me tell you what, man, they cranked out the listens. And that was so cool to have that come up like that. And can you imagine, though, that your city got a name from two guys flipping a coin?
Yeah, two guys flipping a coin. That's crazy, man.
Manano, Luis, maybe that's how y'all ought to settle your arguments, man.
No, I would never do that with you.
You're loose.
No.
They would be like, no, dude, I said heads. No, bro, you said
no, you didn't say heads. Yeah, you said tails.
All right, Luis.
This town in Arizona is known as the home to copper, cattle, and cotton. The largest employers in the area include the Freeport-McMoRan Copper and Gold Companies, which make up the largest new mining operation in North America. Safford, Arizona.
That's Freeport-McMoRan, baby.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir. Freeport-McMoRan. Yep. Good company.
Freeport-McMoRan.
Oh, you know that, huh? All right.
Yeah, they're an operator too in the oil and gas sector.
Cool.
Yep.
I didn't know about that company.
Safford, Arizona.
Moving on, Gilbert.
Absolutely. Guys, the next top listening city is located just across the Potomac River from Washington, D.C. in Northeast Virginia. It's most famous for the Arlington National Cemetery and was established as the American Military Cemetery in the Civil War. The cemetery sits on the grounds of the Confederate General Robert E. Lee's home in the Arlington House. Hmm. Veterans from all of America's wars were buried here. It's also the home to the Tomb of the Unknowns and the Iwo Jima Memorial. And the Pentagon in Arlington, Virginia.
Arlington, Virginia.
Yes,
was there this past Thanksgiving?
That's hallowed ground, brother.
Hallowed ground. Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
You can't go there and not be moved. You know what I mean?
Oh, my gosh. I got chills just talking about it right now.
Yeah.
Thank you so much to our servicemen and women out there where some gave all and some gave some and most gave all of their lives for us to be where we
took my daughters there this past Thanksgiving.
It was so cool because wasn't it their idea to go there?
Mm-hmm. They wanted to.
Yeah.
wanted to go see the Capitol, and you know, they were born here in the U.S. and so I want to foster that, a patriotism on them.
For sure. Coming from mom's side. It's gotta be.
Gotta be from the mom's side.
I don't know who the dad is, but I mean, the, them kids came out with a good heart, man.
Oh, before
Mama, I don't know who his dad's kids are either. He's been
I don't care.
That's what I mean. That's why
the check, huh?
That's why no more babies have come, because he's been in the house the whole time.
Well, I don't know who is the dad, but I'm the one paying bills. That's all that matters.
Yeah, somebody got it good, right?
Right.
So before we go on to Chav doing the next one here, you guys listening, man, why don't you start giving us a little shout out, you know, telling us where everybody's from so everybody that's on there can see where you're from. So I think that'd be pretty cool. Give a little shout out to where your location is, all right? Go ahead, Chav.
Okay, this city is the home of Eastern Kentucky University, and founded by Revolutionary War Colonel John Miller. This city is home to Fort Boonesboro, the second largest Civil War battlefield. Among the many famous residents in the area were two of the most known frontiersmen of all time. And that's Kit Carson and Daniel Boone. And this is in Richmond, Kentucky.
Richmond, Kentucky.
Richmond, Kentucky.
Which reminds me, y'all.
Our brothers from the deep south have showed up.
Well, there's no way I can say Kentucky without thinking about the Kentucky Derby I watched the other day.
Oh, my God. Amazing.
Jesus Christ.
Bro. What do you call the rider? Jokey or?
Jockey.
Jockey?
Jockey.
No, the jockey was Venezuelan.
He was Venezuelan.
Yes. You didn't know that?
But, yeah. And he didn't even know he was a jockey all this time. He thought he was a jockey.
See, I need to send that jokey a pass to be a Venezuelan mafia leader. For one day.
That's awesome, man.
Yes, you should. Especially when he knows you called him a jokey.
Jokey.
I'm laughing with you, bro. I thought that was awesome.
Look, and I know I said something funny. I don't know what I said, but that's all good as long as you're all laughing.
Have a drink, son. Have a drink on me.
There's a jockey in Venezuela right now going, what?
Manano knows what it is. He knows.
Oh, he has no idea what we're talking about.
Manano knows horses, man. He knows what a horse is, right?
Luis does not.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
But, hey, what about that race, man? Get this. The horse was not even supposed to be in the race.
He was an alternate.
Alternate. 80 yes. to 1.
80 to 1, man.
Yes. He was the second one from the bottom up.
Yeah.
$1,000 bet brought you 80 grand.
You saw when he finished, dude, he had dirt. I mean,
mud all over him.
This guy, this was a mudder that came from the back.
Yeah. Hey, we got David Pullman, and he apologizes in advance from Ventura, California.
Oh. You don't have to apologize, bro.
You don't.
He does.
You have John Waldron,
Carbon County,
Wyoming.
Yeah.
You got Mr. Kyle Schaefer, Georgetown, Texas. And Drew Sawyer. Hello, Drew, from Birmingham, Alabama. So, and then we have Roland Smith from Nashville, Tennessee.
Yes, sir.
And we got our brother Travis O'Shea, yeah. Grand Prairie, Alberta, Canada.
Can't wait to see that country.
Yep, we'll be seeing that.
Oh yeah, yep.
That's gonna happen.
Joe, we got one more city that's yours, brother.
Yes, sir. Located in the eastern plains of New Mexico, and it's a pleasure to talk about this. This top listening city is a favorite stop for cross country travelers on Interstate I-40, formerly known as Route 66. Once called the Gateway to the West, the town had several names, which I didn't know. Chav, did you know these, man?
No.
So it was called Ragtown, Six Shooter Side, due to numerous gunfights, and Douglas before settling on its current name. The current name came from a nearby mountain and is of Comanche origin. And y'all, many TV and movies have been filmed here, among them with one of my favorite actors, Rawhide, starring Clint Eastwood, Few Dollars More, Hell or High Water, and an episode of Better Call Saul.
Cool. And
Tucumcari, New Mexico.
Tucumcari, New Mexico. So is it route or is it route?
It's route 66.
Yeah. You call
it? Yeah. That would be me, Joe.
There you go. The legend.
Tomato, tomato.
The legend said tomato, whatever, dude. Whatever.
Chavez Focus says you can call it whatever you want, man. Because it doesn't
When you're the legend, anymore, you can call it whatever you want.
Right. Exactly. Right, that's a privilege. Yeah,
exactly. Charlie's laughing late at my joke.
Yeah, jokey.
My jokey.
Yeah.
So let's get into tonight's content. And guys, we call this Cast Calling for Elk, and this is something that I have created as a way to explain calling and how to go about doing that. And cast calling is really about the call you use, the presentation, and placing your calls where they should get a hit. Does it sound familiar, Gilbert? Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, I do a lot of comparison between like turkey hunting and elk hunting. And even though there's some people get mad about that, there are aspects of turkey hunting that are like elk hunting. There are some that are nothing like it, right?
Yeah.
And there's just like, you know, well, we're not going to go walk in a lake, but there's a lot of familiarities between fishing and elk hunting, man.
Mm-hmm.
I think people that do these things really know a lot more. And especially when you're talking about cast calling, I really think about fly fishermen with this, because Chav and I went to the river, and I do this on a lake where Gilbert fishes. I am the 90% side of people that sit on the bank and don't catch anything all day while Gilbert's out there pulling out 10 pounders and taking selfies and putting it on Instagram, right? You know, I'm out there, you know, going like, yeah, you know, but, and the same thing with fly fishermen. Me and Chav, we floated, I don't know what, 20 some miles down the river, Chav?
Oh, yeah.
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 Near Glenwood Springs. I think from the frying pan all the way down to the Arkansas, had a blast. But in that amount of water, we probably caught two fish with spin casting, right? And we're watching guys float by us with fly rods, just putting it in, you know, and then put it in there. I mean, fish after fish after fish. Yeah. We were the 90%. They were the 10%. And here's the deal is I want to become a fly fisherman. Well, I can take a fly rod. It's just like guys picking up a bow. I can get a fly rod and I can make that puppy go where I want to. I can feed that line. I can put it out. I can place it on a dime out there. But one thing that I don't have is the knowledge of what to use for that fish at that time of year and to make it happen. Just like a lot of people that have archery equipment and they can shoot so great. They even have a bugle and they know how to rip a bugle off that, but they don't have the knowledge of knowing what to use, when, and how to use it, right? Whether it's time of year, time of day, or situation, right? So that's what I'm talking about when I talk about cast calling. It's so much like that. And we get these questions from people all the time that they ask us this. How do you know when or where to call elk? How do you know what calls or sounds to use? Are some calls better than others at certain times of years? How do you know what to do once you get a response, right? So what I want to tell you is you actually, if you're a fly fisherman, you're a lake fisherman, you're a turkey hunter, all those people, you actually know a whole lot more of the answers to this than you think. And I don't want to say it's not as difficult as you don't think. It's just learning some of that knowledge of what's happening, the behavior and why you're doing it. Because now I know if I go to a stream or a river and I want to know what to use, well, then I go to that creek at that time of year and I roll up a rock and I find out what bugs are existing in that river, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. How do you know, Gilbert, what lure to use at a certain time of year on a lake?
Well, it happens every time of year, right? You know when you're in the spawn, you know when you're in the pre-spawn, you know when you're in a post-spawn. So that tells me what kind of lures I'm going to start using, right? What type of year we're in. Are they breeding? Are they getting ready to breed? Or are they after the breeding, right? So it tells me exactly. It's a perfect correlation to how we're going to.
Manana would be on a postpone.
Would be in my hammock.
Right.
With a beer in my hand.
Just for me to bring the fish back so he can cook that mad dog.
No, no. Right? He'll be like, I postpone.
Yeah. So for me, Joe, it's about knowing the time of year, knowing, you know, and then picking which lures I'm going to go after, right?
Right.
Water clarity, water temperature, those kinds of things. So all of that stuff factors into how I'm going to start approaching a fish, right?
Right. Now, but let me ask you a question though, bro. You take any of those times a year.
Yeah.
Does what you're using and how you're fishing change from morning to afternoon?
100%. Yeah.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Has to. Your water temperature is going to warm up. The fish are going to get active more early as the sunlight hits. You'll have a shad spawn where they really going to get in there early as soon as the sun comes up. When that sun makes a little crack, the shad will sink. They won't be on the surface. So they'll sink. Your topwater baits won't be as efficient as they were early. So then you're going to go down to something that's a little bit more under the surface that you're working, right? But it's the same school that you're after, right? Just have to learn how to work the animal a little bit different at the time of the day and at the time of the year, right?
And so let's say I'm going to take this a step further. You've gone from the open lake and you've gone up into a side tributary where it's got a whole bunch of logs and branches sticking up. Does that change your strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Right?
They're going to relate to that cover, you know, so same way with the elk. They're going to relate to the little trinosses that are there that they travel back and forth. And, you know, all of the different landscape that's there are going to affect how they travel. And how they go to their bedding areas and how do they, you know, come down to the water, wallows, all of those things are going to go into effect on bull travel, right?
Right.
And cow travel as well, but cows are usually leading the pack, right?
Now, David Pullman makes a comment over here that's totally legitimate. And he says that elk hunting is so much harder than fishing. You have 9 months to prepare for 7 or 14 days, which is legitimate, right? And when you suck, your freezer stays empty. Then you go fishing to make yourself feel better. But
after, you can use live bait when you fish, David. You use live bait. That's cheating.
But the whole point of this, though, David, is not the point that, you know, one's easier than the other. The point I'm trying to make across is that the type of calls that you use, what I'm trying to do is actually give you fishing in a sense to help you understand how using those calls change how and what and where and when you're going to do things. And once you start to understand that, because I tell you what, if for that 11 months that you're talking about preparing, had you – not you necessarily, I'm not talking to you necessarily, just had people worked on – knowing and understanding the elk knowledge, understanding their behaviors at the different times, understand what and how they're communicating and best way to respond to that, then it sure opens up a lot more. And you start to recognize, just like in fishing, you know, I know Gilbert, I can do it. I can go to a lake. I can go to a creek and I can look at it and figure, that looks like a bass right there. I mean, that's where an area they're going to be. So because I understand elk behavior. So what happens is through my 11 months, I have the opportunity to listen to stuff like this, to go out and learn, to go to different places to learn to do that. You can go to our academy. You can go to Corey Jacobson's Elk 101. You can go to the Elk Collective on there. You can go to Chris Rose out there. You can get the Elk Nuts app out there as well. And I mean, Paul Medell gives all kinds of information on behavior. And go to Mark Livesey's academy on learning how to e-scout, because you're going to get a lot of information there. Mm-hmm. Go to an elk shape camp. Go listen to Dan. It's not about just us. It's about you and you learning. So that's the point I'm trying to make, is that what you have between this 6 inches between your ears is more critical than being able to whip that fly rod and make it land on a dime.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way, with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com. The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
For sure. Yeah. The knowledge that you have, that you possess, absolutely, is the most important part. That's why you got to invest in yourself.
And I'm preaching to the choir, because that's why people are listening to this right now, right? So kudos to you guys that are listening to this stuff. But we're not the only ones out there. And I'm telling you, there's great podcasts out there. Go listen to Guy DePlanchet. Go listen to Jim Huntsman out there.
Yes.
You know, go listen to Backcountry Rookies. In fact, I think if you go to, I'm trying to remember Elk Nuts, I'm trying to remember his Got Game, I think.
Yes.
They have their own podcast where Paul does some stuff on there. Shoot, go on Instagram. Paul puts stuff on there all the time.
Tons of it, man. His videos are epic.
He is an educator. And that's why we get along so well.
Huge
the man
coach.
Is an educator at heart, and I really appreciate that in him, right? So, let's go move on a little bit on this, because I just want to tell you, cast calling pretty much answers all those questions. And think about, like, some of these, like, if you wanted to know, like, when or where or how far to go, you know, and you are somebody that does that fishing and then you do that casting, start just putting that in the back of your mind while we're going to this, okay? Now, I'm telling you, this is, we're going to break this into parts, because there's no way we're going to get through all this. It just gets too deep, all right? And I don't want to cut through it fast, because there's three areas, right? There's three areas that really, in cast calling, that you want to focus on. You want to use the best bait or the call for the time of day, season, or situation. You want to understand presentation, the how and why you call. And you want to understand placement, where and when you call. So we're going to actually start out with the bait right now. What call or sounds to use, right? And I'm going to actually start with the one thing that most people don't talk about. And
Bruno?
What's that?
Bruno?
Bruno?
Yeah. Bruno. You don't have young kids, man. This is a joke for people with young kids.
Yeah. Bro,
there's a Disney movie, a very famous song. It says, we don't talk about Bruno.
It's a good thing you're getting out.
Some people will get it. Some people will get it. Some people, this is for all audiences.
Hey,
some people
El,
will get
El,
it.
El Cantanto?
If you know, you know.
If you know, you know.
So, and you know, people always talk about time of season, and they talk about situations, right? They don't talk about the best calls during time of day. They don't really talk about that, right? And that's mm-hmm. like Gilbert, you know, a lot of fishermen go out in the spring and say, okay, they're running, and so I'm going to use this bait, right? Or mm-hmm. it's winter, and I'm going to use this one, right?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. a lot of people just go with that, and they don't consider it the time of day. So here's my question. When are elk most vocal?
In the mornings and in the evenings.
Evening, yeah. I think. Yeah.
And at night, right?
Yeah. And at night, yeah.
Yeah. Morning, evening, and at night. Now, they're going to be vocal coming out of darkness into the daylight in the morning. And if you've, you know, depending on where they are, how much shadow they are, how cool it is, and different things, they can be local. And depending on, because I always, here's the problem. We always think our region, but let's say that you're up in those areas where they have wolves. They might not even be
vocal
that much at all, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Or you're down in Arizona, and I think Arizona has that. I think they have a 7:30 alarm in Arizona, mm-hmm. man. 7:30, they're shut up.
Or right? Southern Colorado, where they don't talk a lot either because of the pressure.
Yeah. But, and it's at a certain time of day, right?
Yeah.
But generally,
yeah.
they're going to come out of the night in the morning, and they're going to be the most vocal. Now, in the evening, they're going to start picking up. And me and Chav have been in situations where I've worked an area. And Chav, I don't know if you remember this bull that was just off our hid meadow there, right where the line of trees met the scrub oak. We always, and that's another key I want to throw out since I mentioned it, is transition areas, like from timber to scrub oak.
Or to a burn. It's
really key areas for elk, right? But I don't know if you remember that bull, Chav, that we would hunt that area, look for that bull, try, you know, different strategies, get that bull in. And it's like he wasn't there. It would get dark, and he would scream as soon as it got dark. And we're like, son of a buck, man. I mean, every time it was like he wasn't going to sound off until the sun went down.
Right.
Yep.
And so that happens to us. So let's talk about early morning casting then. Because early morning casting of calls is different from midday and it's different from afternoon.
Yes.
Because
that early morning stuff, you can be real soft and, you know, real, use your cow calls real soft. You know, you want to light somebody's fire up at daylight when there's nothing being said, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's like when you wake up in the morning, man. You wake up in the morning, you just kind of, you're just stretching, getting up, you know, getting started, and just kind of slow build.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I'm always late, so every time I wake up in elk camp, I have to run.
Or he's on his phone.
But early morning casting, when I early morning cast, you think about it, sound carries a lot further, right? Yep. So I can actually be up on ridges. I can be at higher elevation. I can bounce my sound off of canyon walls. I can bounce it inside of a canyon. I can call over a bowl. And my casting is real effective at that time because my sound is going to carry a long, long ways, right?
And you can use your bugle tube, Joe, too, with those softer cow calls and project it further as well.
Absolutely.
I've been with Joe many, many days where, you know, it's just a, and then he grabs his bugle tube and, and I mean, dude, and then Tyrannosaurus Rex lights up, right? I mean, here we go. It's like kick the tires and light the fires, boys. Here we go. It's so cool to have that happen, you know, but you're right, Joe. You want to start off.
And that moment you realize you wish you would have stretched at camp.
Yeah. There's a Instagram post and it goes, no. And it was that moment that you just
realized.
You know, yeah. You realized. You
messed up.
Yeah, you messed up because Joe is going to outrun all of us.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, Armando, the bow hitch, y'all, is in the house. Our brother is here. Gee, man.
Yeah, Armando.
So many of our guys are there, man. I was worried this year I'd be late going with Joe. he's so funny, dude.
Yeah.
If you guys, man, go jump on the bow hitch's site, man. I tell you what. It's It is the best thing since sliced bread. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Go Can't wait to use mine this year, brother.
Absolutely, man.
He got the joke of Bruno, man. See? I told you.
So did Drew's air, man. I'm with you, man. He
has Flatlander says, man, 3:30 in the morning comes quick. Yeah. I know, no doubt. We're going to go out night bugling for 3 hours before we got to get on them.
Yeah. So, but the thing that you have to realize is in the morning casting changes from midday, because midday you're in the trees.
Yes.
Now your calling isn't carrying as far. Mm-hmm. So, and it's a different kind of calling now, because now you're reaching out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Man, in the midday, you've now, or myself, what I like is in midday, I like to be on those elk trails, on those knuckles, in those areas that are those upper benches. And I love being on those elk trails at that time. And you're going to hear us talking about it when we start talking about presentation and talking about placing. But I do something called chumming. Yep. You know, if you want to talk about fishing, I'm chumming, man. Yep. Because as I'm moving along, constantly I'm like, trolling. I mean, I'm sounding
like a herd.
Yeah, I'm sounding just like a little group of cows moving through, maybe a calf. And because I hate to walk and not take the opportunity that's possibly an animal there, right? If you just go, well, I'm not hearing anything, and you walk a half mile, you might have walked by another elk that you could have got something to already speak up about, right? So that's something to think about. And then in the afternoon, I'm kind of dropping from some of those and going into those corridors there. So my calling and how I'm casting is different, because in the morning, I'm casting, trying to get in all these areas to get that morning bugle, that morning response. And you can cast a cow call first. And you always hear us say, guys, to never leave elk to find elk. Well, we always like to call from near to far. We always like to check close, and then we reach out. So
we have seen, Joe, we have seen elk leave elk to go find other elk at the end of the day. But that's generally when there is a rut going on. And you guys, you know, y'all want to know when are elk most vocal. When there's a rut going on, we've heard them go all day. Like you pop over another ridge and it's on like Donkey Kong when you ain't heard a peep. Right. So it's been crazy, crazy. When you have a rut going on, you can expect it to go on all day. These cows keep popping and you start hearing more and more activity. I'm telling you, you stay in there with them. You don't have to leave them. They'll come to you. All you got to do is sound like a lover before a fighter and it'll be on. But that is really the only time when you'll hear them all day, huh, Joe, is when you got a big rut going.
Yeah, Joe, what diaphragm call do you have there, bro? Damn.
That's Grinder.
You could have shown up before you had a slobber all over it. I mean, it would have been better.
I just want everybody to realize, man, you know, this guy talks about slobber, right? And he killed the biggest bull of his life because I took it for the team and took his diaphragm call, his nasty diaphragm call, and put it in my mouth, man.
Yeah, you're definitely a team player, but I refuse to take it back.
I know.
I tried to tell y'all, Cody, brother, get ready. Get ready.
Be ready. So
David, be ready. Mr. Newberry, be ready. If
I'm out casting calls, man, our first one that we do now, if I have a thing to go over and I'm doing near from far, you know, it's just a, that's all I want, man. I just want a little one that's going to come out. Just a little sound right there. If I don't get any kind of response, I'm going to take it a little bit further, man. And here's the thing. That is really, really great early season, because everybody thinks that I'm cow calling, and that's not necessarily the case. Early season and all through the year, bull need mews. Okay? Yeah. I call it a bow call.
Bull
right?
Mew.
Bull mew, call. Man. Not a cow call, it's a bow call. Then if I need to reach out there, and guys, look, it doesn't have to be a beautiful three-tone. It doesn't have to be that. Because that's not what those guys are hearing out there. It's just a two-note, one-note. A lot of times all I'm doing is broadcasting. That's all I'm doing. And I'll do it from north all the way to south, man. I'll just take that noise and take it out as I'm going there.
Okay? Hey, Joe, is Loretta home?
No, she's not home, man.
Okay, I can tell. I can tell.
But generally, she hears all this going on.
You got me all fired up, Joe. I was looking for my Bugle Tube and my calls, but my wife is unbound. I'm telling you, she's in-house.
Look, there's no way you can go into producing your own calls and not be noises in the house, man. You know?
She's going to build you a shed in the back, a he shed, not a she shed.
Yeah, you didn't break this in for me, Travis. You nasty.
he did. You just don't know it.
Oh yeah. Exactly. I mean, it's sweet, man. We're really liking that. So midday, when I'm going midday, and I'm starting to do that. And now I'm really, again, I'm sticking with cow calls. Do I love to bugle a bull in? Love it, man. But I got to get one to talk to me, and I got to get one to react to me. And if I don't know one's there, I am moving through those trails, and I am chumming. I am cow calling like a little group as I'm going through. And I'm looking for something that's going to sneak into me or something that's going to speak up, right? And this is such a hard thing to do, this live stuff, man, when people are making comments.
I know Cole said, I can build that she shed, Joe.
All right.
My brother Cole. Yeah, we'll build a she shed and I'll end up in it. Right?
It'll be nice if Cole Wilkes builds it, buddy.
Yeah, for the listeners there, for everybody that's listening to this after we've done the live, we've got everybody chatting on the side right here, and Cole Wilkes, after I just talked about the call and said that he could make a she shed for me so that she wouldn't have to worry, man. And let me tell you what, the boy could build one, man. Absolutely.
Some of the best. You boys in Texas, if y'all need some help around that God's country there just north of Austin, y'all give Cole Wilkes a call.
So the other thing is that I want to tell you is, early morning is probably when I am the most active in my distance, and midday, that pace slows way down as I'm moving through those trails and I'm chumming, okay? Mm-hmm. If you're trying to get an eye on how we cover country. Now, let's say that in the morning, I'm not getting a response, but I've come through an area where all of a sudden I got fresh crap on the ground and I'm smelling animals close by. Mm-hmm. Well, now I'm getting ready to stop and put on a scenario, man, and because something's told me it's there. Right, RC?
That's right.
Look, I hearken back to a time that RC Knox and I were up in an area that we call the bedroom, and or just below it, really. And we hadn't heard a peep all morning, like nothing. And we know that elk are in the area. RC was so aggravated and so mad. He just gets on his hyper call, man, and he goes, you know what? Heck with it. He rips off a nasty bugle, and then he goes to whining on that hyper call. I'm talking like ultra. I mean, he's just whining on that thing. He goes, we got nothing to lose. We ain't heard anything all morning. All of a sudden, I mean, we ain't even stopped 35 seconds. I turn and look, and it is a herd of elk coming down a ridge. And, I mean, a giant 6x6 with that herd. And the problem was is the herd went across, and we're standing out right kind of like right in this little trailhead, and they're looking right at us, and the bull stops. I need him to go another 3 feet to clear the front of a cow, and I shoot him at about 45 yards, stone dead, you know. And they kind of got a little gust from us because the thermals were going up, and boom, they fly out of there. And he looked at me, and I looked at him, and I said, oh my gosh. And it wasn't 10 seconds later, we turn and look to our left, and here comes a spike. I mean, just dumb as a bag of hammers. Here he comes running up in there and he stops at 17 yards broadside. And I drew my bow and I'm telling you, you could have let all the air out of RC Knox. He's like, this fella is fixing to kill a bull right here in this horrible spot, but he's got him at 17 yards. And I had it at full draw, RC over my left shoulder. I looked at him and I winked and I went, nah. And I let down and I thought RC Knox was going to choke me out on that mountain right there. I mean, we had worked so hard that morning, but what I'm trying to get at, guys, is you never know. You gotta make sounds. You gotta work hard. And you know that elk are vocal creatures, right? They're going to hear you even if they're shut up, and they will come and find you. As long as you keep being persistent and keep moving, you got a shot, you know, and, Joe's right, man. As long as you're chumming and you're doing the right things, and RC was, we kind of threw caution to the wind. And he just went off with that cow call, and that set the whole herd coming down the mountain to it.
Grinders tuning in, thank you for listening to the Blue Collar Elk Hunting Podcast. Our goal is to share our knowledge and help you flatten that learning curve so that you too can have some of the very same incredible experiences that have given all of us here at Elk Bros a lifetime of memories. If you like what you hear or see, you can get all of this information plus so much more from our Basecamp Elk Hunting Training Camp, the first in a series of online courses from our Blue Collar Elk Academy. Our Basecamp Training Camp allows me to use my coaching style and share almost 40 years of elk hunting experiences successfully hunting elk on public lands, as well as over 20 years guiding hunters of all ages and experience levels. This course will be like nothing you have ever experienced in concept and structure, using success-based coaching techniques that will elevate your confidence and skill sets. Our camp will prepare you specifically from that final moment most in your control, those final minutes or seconds the elk is in front of you, backwards through each step and level, allowing you to see, visualize, understand, and relate every coaching point to what lies ahead. The next step, the next thought process, the next success. Because y'all, you've already been there. You know what it looks like. By tapping my 30 years of teaching and coaching experience, our camps are developed considering multiple learning modes with text, visuals, audio, as well as video. And Basecamp will benefit those new to elk hunting all the way to the 10 to 15 year vet. So if you are looking for that one thing to help you fill that tag this year, invest in the most important piece of equipment there is, you and your elk hunting knowledge. You can find the Blue Collar Elk Hunting Academy and the Base Camp Training Camp at elkbros.com. That's ELKBROS.com. Keep dreaming of the screaming, believing in achieving, and most of all, keep grinding. So let me ask you a question, though, in that scenario. Had you guys been calling any at all up to that point?
No.
So you've been silent the whole time?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, every now and then, RC, every now and then, but nothing. We hadn't ripped off no big bugles or nothing. We weren't hearing anything.
Yeah.
So.
And we were more or less headed to a park that we knew that they crossed and where they, like you say, the knuckles, we were almost to the knuckle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, that's where we were headed to.
And I think a lot of times for a lot of people, they think the same thing as what Gilbert says. Well, we're not hearing anything, so we're not going to say anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no way something is going to come to you if it doesn't hear you.
Exactly. So,
that's something for you guys to think about, right, that are out there.
You just got to hope you dumb into them then and, you know, walk up on one that you see in front of you and hope the wind's right. And then, you know, that's a way to kill an elk. I mean, I've been there, done that. But at the end of the day, you know, you're out there calling a critter that wants to talk to you in the right time of the year that the talking is supposed to be going on. Sometimes you just got to make your own, you know, your own will and your own way. And I'll never forget that. It was a big lesson learned for me. And very young in my elk hunting career.
So I'm going to go back to that question I asked. I asked when elk are most vocal. So I'm going to ask when elk are least vocal.
Midday?
Yeah, midday. Yeah.
Okay, sometimes.
Yeah, it depends on if the rut's going on, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and it would depend on if you're post or pre, I would think as well.
Yeah, and you know why I think a lot of people think that elk are the least vocal at midday is because
they're at camp.
They're at camp.
Yeah. Yeah. I've honestly guiding, I was guiding a guy and he looked at his watch and he said, well, I guess it's time to go back to camp. And I said, why? He says, it's 10 o'clock.
Hmm.
I'm like, what do you mean it's 10 o'clock? Well, the elk bed down at 10 o'clock.
The cat told you that.
Yeah.
You talked to him. You called him today or what? I mean,
I'm like, yeah. Look, no. Dude, I've been doing this for a little while. And I ain't seen a watch on an elk yet.
No,
I haven't seen one.
No, they kind of Forrest Gump of the forest. When they tired, they lay down. When they hungry, they eat. When they thirsty, they drink.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And what was so funny about that was, it wasn't 15 minutes later because I sat down and said, no, bud, that ain't, these guys can go off at any time. I gave out a cow call and the bull bugles and all of a sudden you start hearing all these cow calls go off, not 300 yards from us. And I looked at him and I was like, dang it, man. Those guys are, they're not following the rules.
Yeah. They didn't get the memo. Yeah.
They didn't get the idea on that, right? So. But they're going to be the least vocal during the day, and a lot of times we don't hear them because the trees, the wind, the terrain, where they bed, different things is going to make it harder to hear their calls. So a lot of times it's not always that they are not being vocal, it's that we're not there where that tree in the forest is falling, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But it's definitely, they're definitely going to be much more vocal when they're going there. It's going to be certain times of day and certain things when they get up to move at different times. But that midday can be a great time out there.
Yes.
So the pace that I was talking about before, the pace that I want to talk about was morning, kind of moving a little bit more. What are some things, Manano, because I walked behind you this year, and when you're going, there are certain things that cause you to start putting on the brakes in a certain area. What are those things?
Sounds, Joe. I don't have the ability to walk and cow call at the same time, so I have to listen to the woods pretty good.
Tell you what,
well.
Altitude.
Oh, yeah. Altitude will make you slow down.
Hell yes. Altitude and degree of difficulty.
But what is it that you guys see or what happens that makes you think, I need to stop here and listen, look, or smell? What types of things?
It's a combination of several things. Signs, mm-hmm. If you see something that calls your attention or you just feel it. It's just a natural feeling. I don't know. It's a,
or smell. It's a,
yeah, and smell. Well, I got a big nose, so.
that's the one thing that we have in common there. And Chav, what about you, man? What type
if you're walking along and you smell something, it's obvious something's either been there or something's there in the area, right? And, sometimes, chipmunks, or squirrels start chattering. You kind of know something's in the area.
You absolutely know.
They might be chirping at you, but there could be an elk in the area too, or a lot of elk.
Yeah, generally, if you can't see that squirrel, he's generally at something else. If he can see you, then yeah, I mean, he could be.
Yeah.
He could be ratting you out, but most of the time they're ratting on their.
But it could be a deer, it could be a bear, it could be an elk, right? Just something in the area. Now, and if you're moving along and you hear them start lighting up behind you, you can tell how they kind of let something go through before they start chattering at it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I generally find, too, that if it's a predator like a bobcat or a coyote or something like that, they're really emphatic when they hit it. I mean, they go nuts. But when it's just a deer or an elk or something like that, they'll start barking, but it's not that emphatic like bark, you know, that when it's a predator. So that's something else that keys me into, oh man, you know, might be a bear around us or might be a bobcat around us or something, you know, mountain lion or anything like that. So definitely want to be keying into those sounds and smells around the area.
And Cole Wilkes asked, he said, what would you do midday to stir something up, Joe? And he knows exactly because he's done it with me, man. And, you know, sometimes, especially if you have a partner, you have nothing to lose, man. You kind of get a little in an area where you know that. Now, I always say this, where you know elk or possibly that. How do you know that? Well, at that midday time, again, you got to be in those types of areas where they're going to bed down. And it's not going to be in, well, depending, like in Arizona, can they just bed down under some of the junipers or something like that? Absolutely. In our mountainous country or in our mesas, they're going to kind of pick some areas up on the side. They're going to find some areas that are dark, that are way, that are cool. They're going to find timber. It could be north areas. It could be just a choked area in there. And you can tell. So we actually, Cole and myself and Rob were traveling through and we found an area that was a natural funnel all the way down from the top and kind of dropped down, went wide, and kept feeding down the hillside. It was really, really thick, had a lot of benches down on the bottom. And we were just like, this is a great place because that funnel created a megaphone for being able to put on a show. And so we sat down in different areas, and we started playing parts, man. And we started putting on a scenario, putting on a show, just starting out just with a little bit of cow calls, introducing a bull, and then we started to get worked up a little bit, just like two bulls in two areas. Me and Cole, it's so funny, man, when you're two guys doing that and the other guy starts getting all raspy and nasty at you, man, you're like, well, screw you, man. You start getting nasty and I mean, just like a doggone bull was. I was smacking him in the face. He was coming back. I mean, and when Cole starts ripping out a tree, I don't know what he picks up. I don't know if he finds telephone poles or what. But
you know, he's using bear paws and hands he's got.
It sounds like the whole
thing. Glad that boy's never become a proctologist.
Like I said, you never know what you're going to get with us, man. We hadn't done a scenario for 5 minutes, and all of a sudden we caught the side of an elk coming through up the hill. And this spike, we have it on video, this spike walks, I don't know, behind Rob about 10 feet, you know, comes out broadside but you're not able to take a spike in Colorado. So it wasn't a legal bull for us, but it wasn't 5 minutes that we pulled that bull, sucked him up out of that area that looked elky, man. And, you know, that's some of the things that you can do, you know, especially, you know, you're tired or you're getting downtrodden, you know, enjoy it, have some fun, you know,
stop, sit down and get you something to eat. That's one of my favorite things to do, is sit down, get me some granola or peanut butter and bacon sandwich. I mean, whatever we got that we can munch on and relax and think about things that are going on. And you can always keep doing, you know, keep sounding off the whole nine yards. I can remember one time we weren't far from where that place with RC and I was at. We all took a nap in hammocks and I got up and I cow called three times and a bull came in within 65 or 70 yards from us and it had been silent all day, but that bull snuck in there on us and got below us and never said a word, Joe. You know, and that was right when we were you know, everybody was asleep. I'm like, Brendan was with me and he was like, I can't believe this. We're not ready. I'm like, yeah, well, when, you know, my dumb self decided to blow a cow call and didn't have anybody ready, you know, so we learned something there. You know, it was crazy how it happened midday like that for us. But
well, I'll tell you that you learn lessons from things that happen to you, right? And Chav and I would always stay out all day long. And, man, you get tired. And there's a time of the day, just like that Forrest Gump thing, that more tired, we lay down and sleep. And I found this area that just happened to be kind of like on the top of a ridge, but it was heavily treed. And I proceeded to curl up down on the ground, had my bow, you know, right off to the side. And I was like, wow, crash, man. And I'm asleep. And all of a sudden I hear, boom, and I open my eyes to a cow elk's hooves not 10 feet away from me coming down. And I watched this cow and a calf and two other cows walk right by me, had no clue I was there. And I'm like, well, that's cool, man. At midday. And they're moving at midday, right? Because either other people have been going back to camp or something happened to get them up and move them, or they got up by themselves.
I almost got ran over a herd while we were on our hammocks this past September.
We were snoring. That's why we couldn't do anything.
Well, so it was like, I don't know. It was probably the biggest group.
Using the facilities.
It was probably the biggest group of elk we'd seen together, honestly, in that mountain. Because, I mean, we didn't see big groups, but that was what, like eight of them, Manano? Yeah, nine of them?
Seven.
Yeah. So get this, though. After those cows walked by me, I'm like, oh, what's the chances of that happening again? So I lay back down and go to sleep. And the next time I get woke up, it's a cow and a large 6x6. And I'm laying down on the ground and got my bow off 10 feet away from me. So lesson learned is anytime you do lay down to sleep, make sure you have your bow right next to you. Because
next to you with an arrow.
And I'm telling you, you're going to be calling it all. If you're going to be calling it all, that's right. Have an arrow knocked up.
Oh, and if you're going to go number two, like Manano, just make sure that you bring your bow with you. Because you might have elk show up and watch you do it.
Exactly. They checking you out.
Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about bait, and we've talked about, you know, early morning casting and midday casting and afternoon casting, people are going, well, what's the bait you're using? What calls are you using? And I hope they've understand that I always start with a cow call. If I'm moving through during midday, I'm doing cow call scenarios. I'm chumming just like that. Am I using bugles in the morning? Absolutely. I'm going to reach out if I can. If I get a bull that responds to a cow call, do I need to give a bugle? No, I don't. And understand that a cow call is a location call. If I'm going to go through that tube and send it out there and that bull responds, I don't need to do anything else. Why do I want to introduce a bull into the situation when he's responding to a cow, right?
Yeah.
And what will most people do as soon as they hear a bull? It's like, yeah, it's on. Ah! Right? And and next thing you know, they're like, well, you know, he's aiming at me, but he's moving away, right? That's just something we think about. So that midday, I'm chumming. That afternoon, so here's what I've done. I've been moving pretty good in the morning. I slow way down in the midday. And I have this bad habit in the afternoon of I get in my mind where elk are going to be in certain areas, and I really start working towards those areas to where they're going to be coming down from where they are, getting close to their feed areas. So my pace sometimes gets real fast, and sometimes I shouldn't be doing that because I've actually bumped elk doing that on the way going through transition areas. And what I mean by transition is those areas between feed and bed. So that's something to keep in mind. That's a mistake I've made that even to this day, sometimes I get in my head that elk is going to be in this spot by this time of day, and I'll start rushing it sometimes, and I'll pass up good opportunities on elk. We've all done that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I've done it, similarly with hogs, in public land, in areas where I've had encounters with hogs. And I think, you know, in my mind, like you said, I made a pattern of where I think the hogs are at certain times of the day. So just trying to get to that point, you end up spooking hogs
on the way.
On the way.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's something to think about.
Same thing.
And so the calling changes too. So in the morning from the cow calls and the occasional bugles and stuff to where I'm kind of just doing the cow calls unless a situation comes up to where in the afternoon, again, now I'm going from cow calls to letting out a few bugles like a bull going to a destination. The other scenario I love to do is I love to be the destination bull. If there's no activity going on, I will become that bull.
Sure.
So I will act like that bull coming off the ridge that has cows with him that's advertising, trying to work something up. That's the sequence and scenario that I like to do.
That'll actually call cows to you, Joe.
Absolutely. And if you're calling cows to you, You're putting scent in the air. Yes. They are adding scent to the air, making the whole thing more real, and you could end up in a good situation, right? Sure. So that's something to think about. That's the bait. Now, time of season, rut, pre-rut, rut, post-rut, right?
Yep.
Your bait change, just like Gilbert was talking about, when we're pre-rut, when bulls are buddy-buddy, I'm using way more cow calls at that time.
Yeah, way more herd talk.
Yeah, I'm using my chumming technique, and I'm going to have more bulls come in silent. We're rut transition. Now I've got some bulls that are starting to, the young bulls starting to get cows. So I might change a little bit there. Those guys are bulls I can call in just by introducing a possible breeding sequence or tending, if I'm sounding like I'm tending a cow. So I can do some of these during that rut transition. So the bait is changing. Now the bait is becoming a cow in heat during rut transition, a cow in heat during the rut. During the post-rut, I just want to get, because those bulls in, I just want to get them to sound off. And they will start sounding off, those guys that get into rifle and muzzleloader season late like that. So the bait changes a little bit. And when I'm talking about the bait, I'm talking about the call that I'm using at that time of year, right?
That's right.
Once I get into the rut transition in the rut, I can, because how bulls are acting and engaging, if they're becoming territorial, if whether or not they're, you know, being, wanting to be with the herd, whether or not they want to breed, whether or not they're trying to protect what they have, all of those things give me an idea of what bait I can use. Okay. That's just in those situations are going to change. It's going to be time of day, time of season, and situation. Right? 12 to 4 is money because they get up and mill around. Easy time to slay a bull. Absolutely, John. Yeah. And John, let me tell you something, bro. If these people haven't watched on Hunt Wars, I just got to tell you, buddy, you were the best caller on the show, and you came so far. You know, and what, man, I was so, so impressed with you. I just, from coach to you, man, I was proud of you. I mean, I was proud of everybody, but, hands down, man, I got to see all these guys and the calling that they were doing from, the beginning to the end. And Joe had a lot of good qualities of call, but man, he brought some things really from one level to another one throughout the time that I got to see him. So it was extremely impressive, man.
Awesome.
So I think what we're going to do is I think we're going to put this to bed now for today, and we're going to come back to it. I'm not sure if it'll be on our next podcast, but we're going to go into presentation and placement on the next parts of this as far as cast calling goes. All right?
I love that. Yeah, it looks like some fantastic information, Joe. You know, guys, if you like what we're doing, please subscribe, rate, and review us. You got to go to Apple Podcasts or iTunes to review us, and you can check out more elk hunting content at elkbros.com. And just a reminder, if any of our listeners would like their questions answered on our show, just send your questions to info, that's I-N-F-O, at elkbros.com. Mr. Cody Kilpatrick, get your stuff together, son, because you are coming to hunt with the Elk Bros crew in New Mexico this September. We're so proud to have you, brother. Joe, like we say down here in the Lone Star State, husbands kiss your wives, wives kiss your husbands, hug your babies, keep your broad head sharp and your powder dry, and we'll see you next week right here on Blue Collar Elk Hunting. And for all our grinders out there, here's some more music from our buddy Tony Wintrip to close
the show. Peace, everybody. Thanks for being here, man.
The man on top of the world didn't fall there. He knew how to earn his keep with a wall there. He could look anyone in the eye, never was afraid of goodbye. His strength was unimaginable, through the darkest winter storm, never was above the norm. You gotta believe he's unstoppable, and if he'd never done it, he would tell you so. Never complain, it's the way life goes. The man on top of the world didn't fall there. You can see his veins through his t-shirt, determination on his face. Never heard of the word failure, never criticized a race. If you want it, go on and get your song.